is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Thanks for listening. I'm one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Paul Viersen. Hello, Paul.
Susan, how are you?
We're ready for spring, whatever that brings.
In just a few minutes, we'll have several people tell our listeners about this year's Scandinavian Days coming up in Story City. But I believe that isn't the first event of the summer festival season. It's festival season right now.
Well, it started 2 weeks ago, because it started with the Boone River Valley Festival. It slipped by us because it was Memorial Day weekend, which is a week before the end of May. And also, this is a pretty new festival. It just started in 2017, and it really covers a lot of territory in Boone County, starting with several activities at the Arboretum, then a fishing contest at Don Williams Park near Ogden, celebration of the 100th year of the Boone YMCA camp at the camp, and Grand Funk Railroad's 50-year anniversary as the band playing at the Seven Oaks Recreation Area, and hiking and geocaching at Leisure State Park, not to mention a street dance and art park in downtown Boone. So it was all over the county. Boone River Valley Days is only 3 years old, but it's already listed as one of the top 10 festivals in Iowa.
Well, now that sounds like a great event, but coming early and being focused through Boone County, it's not in competition with Scandinavian Days in my town, which is all my all-time favorite festival.
Yeah, your bias is pretty well known around here, Paul. I know how dear to your heart the Scandinavian heritage is, and I also know that it's unique, even in Iowa, which is one of the wonderful things about summer festivals. Each has its own special characteristics. For instance, the other Central Iowa festival taking place this coming weekend is Cambridge's Fireman's Days. I think they're not worrying about competing with Scandinavian Days. I think this is just a good weekend to have a good time. It really represents a lot of local pride in Cambridge.
Well, before we hear from our guests from Story City, tell us a little bit about give us a quick rundown on what Cambridge has planned for that Fireman's Day thing.
Well, it starts Friday, June 7th, in the evening. It used to have Skunk River Valley Days, but a few years ago they decided to feature their fire department and use the occasion to raise money for that vital civic institution. So the Cambridge Fire Department will kick off the festival with hamburgers and hot dogs served at the firehouse. That, as well as several other eating events during the weekend, are provided for a free will donation. After dinner, music in the park included the Ballard Community Band, the Ballard Community Chorus, and Praise Band Palooza. At sunset, they'll have fireworks at the Ballard East Elementary. The big event on Saturday will be a parade-themed Find the Hero in You. Kids who want to wear their favorite hero costumes are welcome. After the parade, kids can enjoy free inflatables in the park. Other games in the park include cake and cookie walk, ring toss, dish toss, and kids' tractor pull. All old-fashioned events. Fireman Days will wrap up from 5 to 7 with a tenderloin dinner. I think it's a festival to celebrate the people in the town, raise money for local causes, and have fun together. From my earliest visits to Cambridge, I know there's a lot of great spirit among the people there.
Well, you know, you could hardly find three summer festivals that are as different as Boone River Valley Days, Cambridge Fireman Days, and Scandinavian Days. I'm also glad you didn't try to summarize the events taking place in Story City. And to avoid missing anything, get a schedule, which you'll find in this week's Story City Herald. And for the highlights, we have Jay Wilson here, the director of the Story City Greater Chamber of Commerce Connection, on the phone. Hello, Jay.
Hi, Paul. How are you this morning?
Well, I bet you're busy. It's the big week of Scandinavian Days, and it's raining today a little bit, but what's the forecast for the weekend? Have you checked, Jay?
I am not paying attention because I'm praying that this rain today is going to be it, and we're clear for the rest of the weekend. I'm not even going to think about it. It's going to be great.
Well, I think it's going to be great no matter if it rains or not. I remember one year, right at the beginning of the parade, there was a huge downpour. It just came down in droves, and We're still alive after that, so
I think we're okay. It was like, oh no.
I shouldn't even say that, you know. I probably, hexed the whole festival. Tell us some things that are going on, and there are a lot of new things in Story City going on with park renovation that really makes a lot of the events rescheduled for other areas of the town, because we've got the North Park that's being all redone, and then unfortunately the swinging bridge was damaged in the ice flood this spring, so
yep.
We've had to move some things around. You might let people know who are used to the festival where yes. things are going to be this year.
Yes, we had to readjust a lot of different things. And we tried to keep it still down towards the park down there, and there's a few events still happening in North Park. The petting zoo is going to be over on the north side, just the north side of the lodge and the carousel, over by the band shell. So that will still be there, and as well as the 4-H games. Everything else that you're used to being down there, the extreme tumbling is going to be on the tennis courts, the face painting, the airbrush tattoo, Mel Shivers making things from junk, all going to be along Grove and Story Street, right along the high school. And those streets will all be blocked off, so you'll have easy access. Now, all our food vendors are still going to be in the pool parking lot, but probably one of the biggest things that's changing is the carnival that used to be along Forest is now going to be in the high school football field parking lot. It's that big fenced-in area on Hillcrest, just top of the football field. So access to the football field, the gate on Broad is what everybody will use. But they're going to set up all their stuff at the top of the fence up there. So
I think you've done a good job of planning for every eventuality. You know, one of my favorite things is Heritage Hall. You might yes. explain what that is, Jay. Heritage Hall is what in the senior center downtown, is that right?
Yes, this is the community center, Sons of Norway. So there's all kinds of things going on there. They'll have foods all day long, but they also have a lot of displays going. So if you'd like to hear a little bit about Scandinavian heritage, you know, go to the hall, check things out. There's people there that can talk to you and tell you a lot of different stories and history behind our Scandinavian Days heritage. And
there are a lot of people there who know how to make Norwegian foods, kringla and krumkaka, and all these things that are magical Norwegian foods. So the Heritage yeah. Hall is really a highlight that keeps in touch with the Scandinavian heritage we're all about. So
I really
think that's a highlight, you know.
Do you still have the yes. kumla eating contest?
Yes, we do. That will be downtown on Broad Street at 1 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. So make sure you come for that.
Well, I should explain that kumla is a very heavy sort of
dumpling
affair.
That ball.
They're kumla balls, and they are all cooked in a stew, usually a ham or a brisket. And they are very tasty if you're a Norwegian, and they're very heavy. One or two does it. And I don't know what the record is, but it sounds like potentially lethal for the winner, probably.
Usually, I can't even imagine. I can eat about two. After that, I'm like, yep, no, I'm done. And so I don't know how these guys and gals eat all these kumla balls, but that's just...
Now, you better have an ambulance standing by in case of kumla shock.
I believe we do, so we are prepared for that.
And the parade is on Saturday at 10 o'clock.
Correct, at 10 o'clock, and we have quite a few entries. We've got a large parade scheduled, so come in and enjoy that. Again, you'll see some Scandinavian heritage throughout the parade, some costumes. So our elementary kids dancers on Friday night as well. That's really a big part of the heritage. We'll have the music. With the kids dancing with all, let's see, how many grades? Four different grades that come and dance. So you'll see some Scandinavian dances, and here's some music.
Yeah, it's like a Norwegian folk dances, and all the kids are dressed in black pants and white shirt
yes.
and a little red vest, and they
yes.
do Norwegian folk dances, and they start
yes.
working on that before school ends, and that's the culmination. And I've walked up there before the kids did it last year, and they were nervous. And I said, "You're going to do okay." And yeah, they did.
And they did great. I was there last year too.
Yeah, they were just satisfied with their effort and just coming off it like they just won the state tournament in basketball or something. Now we have a lot of entertainment too. You might highlight some of the groups coming in or to perform, or the adult events. Let's put it that way.
that's another big change. So since we lost the swing bridge at South Park, we had to move our normal Saturday beer garden to the bowling alley parking lot at the west edge of town on Broad Street.
And I think they'll have live bands at some of these venues.
They have two. They have from 5 to 9, they have the Tank Anthony Band, and then from 9 to 1, they have Punching Pandas.
And then they have, you also have this big craft show. Where is that located?
That will be in the high school gymnasium, actually the new gymnasium, so it's easy to get to. You don't have to go down the stairs. It's just the door on the west side of the school. So parking is good over there in the school parking lot. There might be some construction equipment because they are working on the school over the summer again. So parking may be limited in some areas too. So, you know, use your side streets and you may have to walk a little bit, but it'll be a great weekend to get out and walk. Again, I'm counting on great weather. So.
And there's extreme team tumbling and trampoline at the tennis courts.
Yes.
Wow.
Tennis courts. Yes. Yep. That's it. Let's see. 12 to 1.
Wow.
So that's always just very energetic. I mean, you can think, you know, tumbling and trampoline, it's very energetic. I'm like, wow. And they some of the acrobatic things they do are just crazy. And these young kids, so it's just amazing to watch. And after that, actually, at the tennis courts, we'll have the insect zoo from ISU University. I've never seen this one, but I've heard a lot of people that really like it, and it's very interesting. You see these insects and creatures that you never really get a chance to see up close to. So,
yeah, and that intrigued me too. The insect zoo. I just didn't know what to expect.
And I know, me too.
Well, I just pictured, you know, bumblebees doing tumbling acts or something. And then you've got Saucy Jack performing at the beer garden. That'll be
on Friday night at Swanee's Pub.
Yeah, Saucy Jack is, I think, is a very popular band locally. They've played
Scandinavian
Days before.
Yes. They've been around a few years. They're a great band, so always fun to watch them. And, of course, don't ever forget, we have our Judge Story theatrical troupe production of Children of Eden Thursday, actually, tomorrow night. We have a show at 7, and as well as Saturday and Friday, and then a 1:30 p.m. showing on Sunday.
Right, that's opening on this Thursday night. Children of Eden is a brand-new show, in my recognition, because I just wasn't familiar with that, but I did go to opening night last Thursday. And once again, the Children of Eden will be Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And that is going to be at the legendary Story Theater and Opera House right there on Main Street. And that's something in and of itself. That theater has never closed. It's been operating as a movie theater since 1913. And since the early 1980s, we've had a performance venue, and we've done all sorts of big shows there. I was lucky enough to play Henry Higgins in My Fair Lady in 1998. And we've done all the classics. We've done Carousel, Oklahoma, South Pacific, and all those things. And in more recent years, they've done more of the shows that have been written in recent years and are a little more avant-garde and more like Broadway today. And so, Children of Eden is in that category.
It is, yes.
And I had never seen it before, and I was very impressed. So I would really recommend attending that event. The Children of Eden playing at the Story Theater and Opera House Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And, wow, I was so impressed with the vocal performances. The music is very demanding, and the cast.
I heard that. The music was great, yes.
Yeah, it really was. And a lot of children are involved in this show because when you do Noah's Ark, you have all these puppets and a gigantic elephant on stage manned by three people. It takes three people to be an elephant. I just learned that on Thursday.
Yeah, and I've heard something about the snake, too, and how large it is and how many people it takes to make the snake go and work. So.
Yeah, if you have a snake phobia, you may want to sit in the rear of the theater. This is the biggest snake I've ever seen. I've been to Arizona.
You've been to Arizona.
But now, Jay, this is just another fantastic event, and I know that Scandinavian Days has been going for years and years. Tell me about the prospect and the difficulty sometimes of making sure that quality goes year to year at Scandinavian Days, and this is really an army of volunteers that make it happen.
Oh, my gosh, it is such an army of volunteers. So we have people, we try to line people up. Actually, as soon as Scandinavian Days is over this year, we start planning for the next following year. And we start getting people lined up to take specific parts of the event on. So we have people that line up the bands, the beer gardens, the craft show, the events in the park, and because if you don't book these guys in advance, they're hard to find. One of the things that we were kind of concerned about this last year was our carnival, because the ones that have done the carnival in the past 3 or 4 years actually were retiring. So like, oh, how are we going to find the carnival? And we actually found a great one, I think, who's semi-local. They're out of Pilot Mound.
Really?
Pilot Mound?
Yes.
I visited Pilot Mound. It's a town of about 175 people.
Yep, and 4 exits.
And every one of them had to have tattoos and run carnival rides. Right? That's fantastic. I didn't know they were out of Pilot Mound. But, you know,
contacted us last fall, so.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm glad there is, rides and carnival things that, you can't really have a festival without something like that, because the kids have to go on rides and you have to have somebody there to do the old carnival routine. And that really has to be a part of every festival if possible. I see there's going to be Zap laser tag on the football field.
On the football field, yep. He's going to be back there again. So that's always a good time for the kids. They can just kind of run wild and
Zap laser
tag. Football field, yeah.
Well, it sounds dangerous, but
it's not. It's actually just like a laser kind of light activated. You have a chest plate that if you're hit by the laser, it lights up. So it's very safe. It's not anything that anybody should be concerned about.
Well, I probably would, because I can't run fast enough, and I'd be totally annihilated by a middle schooler.
Yes, yep, that would be my issue also.
Yeah, for sure. I would have laser wounds, probably.
Laser wounds.
But I think that you've got a fine venue here, and you've got a lot of variety of things appealing for all ages.
And there's always something to do. So, and everything starts on Friday afternoon. So come and enjoy the fun. Of course, we've got fireworks on Friday night. We have popcorn that we serve from the carousel for the fireworks on Friday. So, and, of course, we got to talk about the antique carousel, Paul.
Oh, the carousel, yeah, that's one of the things that, actually, it's really the billboard for Story City, the carousel. It's really fantastic. It's got an old-fashioned, well, everything about it is from 1913.
And it's for the Wurlitzer organ.
The Wurlitzer organ with a drum. Everything is, and it's fun to watch the kids. Now, I volunteered there several times, and with young children, they're one of two responses. They're either scared to death or delighted.
Yes.
Or they're scared to death, and that passes into being delighted.
Delightment. Well, I've seen it the other way. I've seen delightment, and then once it's kind of a fast ride because it's a carnival ride. And it hits a certain speed about halfway through the ride, and you can kind of see it kick in, and you can see the faces of the kids sometimes go, oh, hey, that's fast. So sometimes the fear comes later.
Oh, yes, and actually there's a tub on the carousel,
yeah,
and that has leverage. There's a little wheel in there, and this is makes the ride palatable for teenagers, because you can spin that tub, and there's room enough for 4 people. You can spin that tub as fast as you want until you're pulling full G's, and you're an astronaut training. And when I've volunteered, the unfortunate result is that some people not only vomit, but it flies somewhere because of momentum. So that's something to clean up. Ooh, terrible.
I have not had that yet. So, well, one small incident last year I had, that you had a family come in and they said they just got chocolate shakes from McDonald's. I'm like, and they're getting in the tub. I'm like, this is going to be bad.
Yeah, that's rare, but some people push the envelope. And also, yeah. There are all kinds of things for sale at the carousel, denoting Story City and the carousel itself. And actually, there's a National Carousel Association, and they met in Story City before. And this is a very esoteric group of people who are really into carousels. And as a matter of fact, our carousel, actually, it was built to travel. That carousel was owned by somebody who toured all the small towns of Central Iowa and put up the carousel, and then he'd pack it up and go. And my understanding of the story about how it became Story City's carousel is that there was some sort of conflict on dates. And,
conflict on a date, for the 4th of July, I believe.
Yeah, the businessmen just bought it. They said, well, if you're not going to be, we'll buy it from you. And they did that. So when I was growing up in Story City, the carousel was torn down after the summer. It would run all summer near a Super Value store there. And then they'd pack it up and store it in someone's barn. And they did that for years and years. And, of course, when that happened, you had all the freezing and thawing and all the elements that it was exposed to. And these horses are works of art. They're made out of wood with real horsehair tails, you know.
Yes.
And they're painted brightly. Well, over the years, they really deteriorated. And when you go to the carousel, it's in its own pavilion. And on the walls, they show how the artisans restored these horses. We have horses, pigs, roosters. Help me out. Am I missing one?
I don't think so.
No, dogs. Horses, pigs, and roosters.
Dogs. And dogs.
Oh, dogs?
Well, we have dogs. You can ride a dog.
We have dogs. Yep.
And so basically...
We have the Uncle Sam bench. Don't forget about Uncle Sam bench.
Yeah, the Uncle... Now, you see, I've been told... the benches exist because of older folks like me who can get on the carousel. They don't want to mount the horse, but they can sit on these benches and still get sick. But as a matter of fact, this Uncle Sam, and I've been told this, the Uncle Sam bench, and it's kind of like a church pew, you know, it has sides and everything, and the sides are Uncle Sam.
Yep.
And I've been told that bench is so rare, it's almost priceless.
Well, almost it's the only one left.
Yeah.
In its entirety. A lot of the other Uncle Sam benches from this particular carousel that was made in 1913 were cut in half and split apart.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Yeah, you see, I read somewhere recently in an article about the carousel that the horses are worth about $20,000 apiece. And the two roosters are worth $40,000 apiece.
Yes, the roosters are very rare.
And so, well, it's like anything else. If it's rare, it's expensive and valuable.
Yep.
But the real story about the carousel was what happened in the early 1980s, because people finally realized that something precious was vanishing. And they raised funds to pay all these artisans and undergo this tremendous restoration project. Not only the horses, but also the mechanism, the Wurlitzer organ, all the things that had to be restored and regenerated. And they raised money to build the pavilion to house the carousel. And so that was a Herculean effort made by the town. Everybody signed on. And the end product is this carousel sitting in a beautiful pavilion and has a popcorn stand and all the things you can buy.
Yep.
It's a pure delight to watch the kids discover this and the adults, because they come off the interstate highway and they see that sign on the interstate and, of course, they're curious. When they get to town and they get on the carousel horse, oh, it's fun to watch the adults, too. It's just pure delight. And so the carousel...
I had a tour group from southern Iowa come that were retired couples, and one of the ladies got off, said, she said, that took me back. I felt like I was 12 years old again. And there's smiles that go on any face of any age of... And it's just great.
Well, when you ride the carousel, I've found it's fairly fast. The rotation is pretty fast.
Well, like I said, you can kind of feel it kick into that last speed there about halfway through the ride. You're like, yeah, here it goes.
it's just fun. And the carousel is the centerpiece of Story City and the centerpiece of the Scandinavian Days celebration. Now, that begins on Friday, and one of the first events on Friday is an old-fashioned ice cream social at the Grace Methodist Church. And so you have all the homemade pie and the, the whole thing. Something that you can't do if you're on a diet, you know, the whole...
Well, too, but everybody has to go. So my stepson, who is 26, said that's the first thing he's going to do, because that's the first part of it. He's like, I got to go to the ice cream social. So it's something for all ages, and it's just, it's that passion that Story City has about its heritage and how everybody loves Scandinavian Days. Everybody loves the carousel, and we just all love it here so much that we have such a great festival because of all the passion and love. When we talk about volunteers, so many volunteers go into both carousel and Scandinavian Days, so we could never do any of this without our volunteers.
Well, here on Local Talk, Susan and I do a lot of things that really highlight areas around Ames, and this time it's really... a situation where we're into festival season. So every town has its festival and something that's special every summer, and we are no exception in Story City. So we have the Scandinavian Days coming up starting Friday. Actually, the first event is the Children of Eden at Judge Story Theatrical, the Judge Story Theatrical Troupe performing at the Story City Grand Opera House and Theater right on Main Street or Broad Street. And we have the parade on Saturday. We have all kinds of interesting events and activities for people of all ages. And
pick up your brochures. Those were mailed out, but we also have them at some businesses here in town. Sons of Norway, the community center, has some you can pick up. New Care Pharmacy, the GCC office here in town has a pile of them, and we'll have our info booth too, stocked with flyers and T-shirts and wristbands for the laser tag, all down by the carousel.
And that you could buy wristbands for the carnival too. Is that correct?
Yes,
where the kids can just buy one and has X number of rides or whatever. So,
yes.
Scandinavia Day is coming up in Story City, Iowa. Starting on, actually, Thursday night with the opening of the Broadway show Children of Eden. That runs Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Friday night and Friday afternoon. The things get underway at Scandinavian Days with the ice cream social, and then it goes on and up from there. Thank you, Jay.
Yes, anything to do. Thank you, Paul and Susan.
Thank you. And to give our listeners a little preview, we have Spark of Creation, which is sung by Eve, or actually...
That's in Children of Eden. And, of course, Children of Eden portrays the early part of the Old Testament. You have Adam and Eve, Noah, and all those stories. And this character, this song is sung by Eve, the character Eve in the show.
Yes, and the singer in this recording is Stephanie Mills.
Things exist, doesn't it? Beyond. It says, Adam, leave your list, doesn't it? Father, why does my head feel this joy and this dread since the moment I said, beyond. I got a falling on the back of my brain. I've got a hunger burning inside me, cannot be denied. I got a feeling that the Father who made us, when he was kindling the pulse in my veins, he left a tiny spark of that fire smoldering inside. The spark of creation is flickering within me. The spark of creation is blazing in my blood. A bit of the fire that lit up the stars and with life into the mud. First inspiration, the spark of creation. Oh, I see a mountain and I want to climb it. I see a river and I want to leave shore. Where there was nothing, let there be something, something made by me. There's things waiting for me to invent them. There's worlds waiting for me to explore. I am an echo of the internal cry of let there be a spark of creation. Burning bright within me, the spark of creation. Won't let me rest at all until I discover or build or uncover the thing that I can call my celebration of the spark of creation. The spark of creation, may it burn forever. The spark of creation, I'm a keeper of the flame. We think all we want is a lifetime of leisure. Each perfect day the same, endless vacation. Well, that's all right if you're a kind of crustacean. But when you're born with an imagination, sooner or later you're feeling the fire gets hotter and higher. The spark of creation.
This is KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We've just heard about Scandinavian Days, a major event to usher in the summer in Story City. But not every upcoming event is a festival. The Ankeny Community Theater will open their production of The Diary of Anne Frank this Friday, June 7th. And we have the director, Cheryl Clark, here to tell us about it.
My name is Cheryl Clark, and I'm with Ankeny Community Theater in Ankeny, Iowa. We are about to open a production of The Diary of Anne Frank. Opening night is this Friday, June 7th.
Can you tell a little about why you chose this play at this time?
Our play selection committee read Anne Frank about 2 years ago, and then we make our selection 14 months ahead of the season. So we did choose this a bit of time ago, but it is a very timely story. Historically, the day before we open is the 75th anniversary of D-Day, and Anne's birthday, not would have been her 90th birthday, is between the two weekends of our shows. This coming August, August 4th, it will be the 75th anniversary of their capture from the annex where they survived for 26 months during World War II. So it has a number of anniversaries, and also in the particular political climate we seem to find ourselves, there is a great deal of concern among some people about discrimination and about equal opportunities and harassment. And so it is a very timely issue. We know that what happened to the Jews during World War II is horrific. However, it is not isolated and can happen anywhere in the world to any people if we're not diligent.
When I was in school, which is a long time ago, and for many years, The Diary of Anne Frank was just pretty standard required reading in the high schools. Do you know whether that is still true?
I don't know whether it's still true. I have several grandchildren. One of them is going to be a senior, and I've read a lot of things along with him over, especially his high school years, but we have not read The Diary of Anne Frank. So I think it's possible that there are children who've not been exposed to this. It's a wonderfully written piece for Anne being 13 to 15 years old during the time she was in the annex. Her writing is brilliant and very insightful and very mature for a person of her age. And we all have a lot to learn from what she has to say.
Well, I think for any listeners who may not be familiar with the book and the story, it would be helpful if you would tell what the family situation was and why they went, what the annex was and why they went there.
In the spring of 1942, Anne Frank, who was 13 at the time, and her sister Margot, who was 16, and her mother and father lived in Amsterdam. Mr. Frank owned a business in Amsterdam, and he and his wife had been making plans for them to go into hiding. And then Margot, their oldest daughter, got a subscription notice, essentially a draft notice that she was being drafted into the German army. And they immediately went into hiding. And it happened to be, none of them knew, Mr. Frank knew, but the family didn't know where they would be going, happened to be in the very top back corner of this very tall business building where he ran his business. And they nicknamed it the Annex. So it was in a piece of the attic. And the entryway to it from the office portions was disguised with a bookcase built in. So it could only be opened from the inside. So the Franks and the folks who come to live there with them were the only ones who could open the door. And so they had a buzzer system with two people in the office who were their suppliers, their only contact with the outside world, and their supporters during this time. And of course, those two people could have been put to death for having hidden Jews. And so they went into hiding along with a business acquaintance of Mr. Frank's, the Von Dons, Mr. and Mrs. Von Don, and their son Peter, who was 16 at the time. And then about 8 months later, another person, a single man who was a dentist, Mr. Dussel, came to live with them as well. And at the time, they thought that was might be for only a night or two because he couldn't find anywhere else to hide. He ended up staying with them until the end. They lived in about 500 square feet, so it was a very small space. They did not leave the annex. They had a couple of windows that during safe times, they could look out and see what was happening below. And Anne, in particular, talked in her diary about watching this large tree go through the seasons. And that was very helpful to her to see life go on in kind of a normal pattern. So they went into hiding and were successful in hiding for about 26 months. And it's not known exactly how it was that they were discovered in the play, which is taken from excerpts from her book. Her father helped someone do that. But the end suggests that a thief who they heard break into the building several months before they were captured was the one who turned them in for reward money. But there actually isn't any evidence that that's exactly what happened. So it's kind of a mystery how it was they were discovered. But on August 4th, 1944, shortly before the end of the war, they were captured by the Nazis and all separated, men and women separated. To give away the ending of the story, everyone died in the concentration camps. Except for Mr. Frank, who survived, and Margot survived longer than any of the others except Mr. Frank. They were in Bergen-Belsen, and they both succumbed to typhus. So it was an illness that took them. And he did not know until after the war was over, in talking amongst all the survivors, they would compare notes and talk about who they became acquainted with and who they saw and who might know who. And so he did find out from some people that how they all died. And he was the only one who was left. So the diary, the play itself, is the opening is Mr. Frank with his two helpers who helped them survive and was in the annex, returning to the annex several years after his return from concentration camp. And then we fade back into the past and use Anne's diary entries to tell about their existence there for 26 months. So that's what folks will come to see. It is very intense. It's very moving. Of course, there are delightfully funny moments, as we would hope there would be in people's lives over a period of 26 months. But it is very intense, and we would recommend it for children of probably middle school, upper elementary, children and their families who can go home and talk about what they've seen, and of course, all adults.
This is probably a very important time for that play because Holocaust denial is apparently very common now. I read that I think 40% of the population believes that the Holocaust didn't happen. I was in an age when I watched the original films that were released as newsreels before movies you saw. So to imagine that there are 40% of the American population that thinks this didn't happen.
I just cannot understand that. I cannot grasp how you can deny during the years of Hitler's power, over 6 million Jews were executed. And those who survived were maimed and injured and scarred and had lost everything, including family members. And it's not just the Jews, although that's, but Hitler executed over 17 million people, including Poles and Gypsies. And that doesn't count the military casualties. That's just the civilian casualties. I've done lots of research over the last 18 months, and it's just mind-boggling that these things could even happen. But his intent really was, eventual intent was that we would wipe out the population of the Jews and have a, they would have a pure German race.
And yes, other people who were included in that were disabled, including mentally disabled, and the pink triangles, gays and lesbians.
Yes. Yes, of course, and the elderly, a very, very sad period in the history of the world. And I just hope this does a little piece of helping ensure that we never see this sort of thing happen again.
Yes, The Diary of Anne Frank, and that was a great movie, too, starring Millie Perkins. That's Cheryl Clark, director of the Ankeny Community Theater. The play's an adaptation of Diary of a Young Girl by Otto Frank. Evening performances on June 7th, 8th, 13th, 14th, and 15th, all be curtain times at 7:30. Sunday matinees, June 9th and 16th, at 2 p.m., and links to the ticket office will be on our website, here at KHOI. You know, that's one of the great stories of World War II, all that time up in the attic in Amsterdam. And that tree that she looked out on all the time was just cut down a couple of years ago. They did everything they could to preserve that tree. And, of course, Anne and her sister and their mother died of typhus at Bergen-Belsen concentration camp. And Otto was the only survivor. And he found the diary up in that attic. It was just laying on the floor, and he had it published, and of course it was a movie, a Broadway show, and actually I think that's been revised and added to, because when Otto put that diary out, he left out some of the comments that Anne made about her awakening as an adolescent. So I think a newer, more recent edition of the book had more things that Otto didn't put in it. And of course, Anne Frank and her sister are great advertisements for the Montessori schools. That's where they came from.
Oh, they went to Montessori schools.
Yep, they went to Montessori schools. And look at that 15-year-old, how she could write. Wow.
Yeah. Well, that's very interesting. Actually, my children were in a preschool Montessori school, so I have some idea what the theory is, and it's very, very interesting. It was originally developed for workers' children, mm-hmm. and so it was one of the things that children learn right away. And for example, they learned how to wash glasses until they shone. They learned how to scrub floors and make things. They made all kind of toys. But that's really beside the point. The point really is that there is a lot of doubt. And I think that this is one of the things that Cheryl and I talked about, that this is authentic. And of course, you might think, well, since he published the book, but it was her real diary and edited, only edited so that what he didn't think should be made public was not made public.
Yeah. Nope, one of the great stories of all time, and we'll all wonder what Anne Frank could have done with her life.
This is KHOI, and our next guest is Matthew Covington, an organizer for Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement. Welcome, Matthew.
Yeah, good morning. Glad to talk with you.
Last week, we had Ava Allen-Ruan from the Foreign Environmental Team at ICCI here to talk about a lawsuit in the Raccoon River watershed. So this is something completely different. This week, we learned about a speaker addressing an issue in health care that may be neglected in the debate over who pays for health care and who's entitled to it. That's a question of caregivers. Why don't you tell us what ICCI is working on for that issue?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. You hit the nail on the head there that all too often in debates around health care and coverage, who's paying, what has tended to be left out is the work that both paid and family caregivers do. And so we want to elevate that that critical issue with the general public, with elected officials. And so that's why, yeah, as you said, we have a speaker coming out, Susanna Dian from Caring Across Generations. She's going to be here in Iowa this week. And tomorrow night she'll be here in Des Moines at our office for a meeting that that folks can come to if they would like.
Where's your office?
That is at 2001 Forest Avenue here in Des Moines in the Drake neighborhood.
What do you think she's going to be focusing on?
Well, definitely just digging in on who has typically provided care in our history, also, I mean, so that would kind of show a history of how the care and caregiving, though critically important, has been devalued or hidden in our society by gender, by race, and by class, and that caregiving has changed over time, but that with our changing economy, we need to reimagine the way we care and how we care and how we support the paid and family caregivers that provide that care.
Well, when I think of caregivers, I tend to think of people who are caring for the elderly, but this is across the generations. Are you also including early childhood caregivers?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, this is everyone. I mean, so it's not just the elderly. It's also children. It is people of any age with a disability. Also, what's becoming more and more common is that you'll find the sandwich generation, is what some people call, where you are both raising your own children while taking care of your parent, an elderly parent at home. And so you're providing care for that caring across generations, actually.
So are there any, does she have any proposals or?
I'm sure, and we have to imagine that together, but I think that folks should come to the meeting to find out more.
Is there any special reason, candidate visits, that she's coming to Iowa at this time?
Right, yeah, imagine that. No, that's exactly right. With our First in the Nation caucus status, we've got, of course, all of the candidates flocking to our state on a regular basis. And as we saw, you know, in 2016 and 2018 elections, healthcare was a defining issue of the elections. But what was rarely mentioned was this aspect of caregiving. And so it's up to us everyday people to inject that into the presidential race to bring that to the forefront and have that be an issue that's addressed by folks that are seeking our vote.
So do you have any idea about how that can be done?
Oh, well, candidate bird dogging, going to events, speaking out at events, in the media, you know, in CCI Action. We will be having our presidential forum in September here in Des Moines, and caregiving is going to be a critical issue raised at that forum as well. So it's just everyday people have to get in front of the candidates, make sure they know how important of an issue it is, and ask them where they stand on that and what they will do to build a care infrastructure that responds to the needs of the 21st century.
Well, thank you. This sounds like a valuable talk to hear. I guess it's also she's getting there'll be ideas coming from the audience also. Is that part of the idea?
Yeah. Yep. I think that's the best way to do it so that we gain inspiration from the speaker, but then we imagine together what we need to do both here and how that can translate across the country.
Well, I imagine then it's important for people who've actually had some experience, a caregiving problem, really.
That's right. The identifying the problems and identifying possible solutions has to come from the people that have experienced it firsthand.
Well, thank you for providing that opportunity. That is...
Oh, no, yeah.
Yeah, again, it's... what's the time and place?
Yeah, this Thursday, June 6th, from 6:30 to 8 at the CCI Action Office at it's 2001 Forest Avenue here in Des Moines.
Okay. Well, thank you. That was...
Thank you. Yes, have a great morning.
Thank you. That's Matthew Covington. You've been listening to KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Paul Wearson and I, Susan Franzen, have been your hosts for today. Other voices you heard were Jay Wilcox, Cheryl Clark, and Matthew Covington.
And we should say, Susan, that we have an upcoming event out here Friday. This is downtown Ames. It's called the Art Walk. And we're going to be food trucks downtown and all kinds of art, I'm sure. Part of it happens right outside of KHOI. There'll be a food truck parked out here. And I believe we have music, some groups coming in.
Well, we have Red's Blues Band, which I think a lot of our listeners know. Last time they were here, although the street isn't officially blocked off, we had some street dancing. So, yeah. And inside, we are creating, as we do every year, a mural for KHOI. So come in and contribute to the mural and have some cookies and other food and lemonade.
And a lot of it's going to be homemade by very talented people, one of which is sitting right here. She's got a big surprise coming in. That's the Art Walk, 5 to 8 this Friday, here in downtown Ames. Well, you can listen to today's local talk show and any of our past local shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. That's khoifm.org.
Local Talk was engineered by Cynthia McClure. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Spark of Creation, sung by Stephanie Mills from the soundtrack of Children of Eden, and Für Elise by Ludwig von Beethoven.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us 515-292-2878 or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. Now, that's also what you need to know to contact us if you will decide to become a member or renew your membership today. Just look for the yellow donate button.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI meaningful and possible. Thanks for listening, and
see you again on the radio.